Starting with slide 12 today, we were talking about the cell cycle, and so we've already been through what the cell cycle is and what it consists of. Now it's time to talk about the control of it. It's important for a cell to be able to know where it is in the cycle and know, therefore, when it's appropriate to go to the next part of the cell cycle. So the cell cycle has to be a controllable thing. And it's reasonable to assume that there is some material, some chemical basis for the control of the cell cycle. In other words, some molecule or substance that is part of this control. But it's not enough for something to just make sense. You can't assume it's true in science. You have to demonstrate it. And we see a couple experiments designed to do that. In the first experiment, they took a cell that is currently in the S phase. Now, where is S in the overall cell cycle? Of what?
Mitosis?
No, it's before mitosis.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
What is the first major subphase of the cell cycle? Major subphase. Interphase, right. And S is the second subphase of interphase, right? So that's where this is. And what important thing happens in S? Right, that's when DNA gets copied. So that's where this cell is. This one's in G1, which is before S, right? So this is earlier in the cell cycle. This one's a little later. And they experimentally fused these two cells into one cell. And what they saw is that the nucleus that was in the isolated G1 cell immediately proceeded to the S phase and started replicating its DNA. So that by itself is supporting evidence, right? That agrees with the assumption that there is a material basis for the control of the cell cycle. But experiment two is much more convincing, because in here they took a cell that's in the M phase. That's at the end of the cell cycle, right? That's when the splitting happens. And joined it with a G1 cell, which is at the beginning of a cell cycle. So they're on opposite ends of the cell cycle. And the G1 nucleus immediately started trying to undergo mitosis. I say try to because in mitosis you have the splitting of two replicated chromosomes, right? But it skipped over S, so it couldn't possibly do mitosis since it only had one copy, but it tried to anyway, which really is strong evidence that because of some chemical that it's exposed to from the M cell, it wants to be an M as well. So this doesn't at all say what the substance is or substances, but it does lend a lot of credence to the assumption that there is a chemical basis for control of the cell cycle. Well, 13 depicts a cell cycle kind of like a lamp timer. You know, real lamp timers that, depending on the brand you get, have little red pieces of plastic that you stick in, which is when it turns it on or turns it off, right? You choose those times. Those red things on here are labeled as checkpoints. Checkpoints are not actual structures. Checkpoints are just sets of chemical circumstances. So it's a set of conditions. A checkpoint is a set of conditions that has to exist in a cell for the cell to be able to proceed from one part of the cell cycle through that checkpoint to the next part of the cell cycle. And you can see, for instance, that there is a so-called G1 checkpoint. It makes sense for there to be a checkpoint here, right? Because this is an important part of the cell cycle. G1 is the normal lifetime of the cell, being busy being that kind of cell, right? Only under the correct circumstances would it be appropriate for a cell to go past G1 through the checkpoint and do the rest of the cell cycle, all of which has to do with preparing for and then preparing for splitting and then finally splitting. So that's an important checkpoint, and similarly there's checkpoints down here, but that's what a checkpoint is. It's a set of chemical conditions that have to be met. Slide 14 compares two kinds of cells. Now, a typical cell will eventually be able to satisfy those conditions and get past the G1 checkpoint and go on to S and everything else. For instance, a skin cell can do this pretty easily. You're always adding millions of skin cells every day because you lose millions of skin cells every day, right? Just by living, just having wind blow on you will remove millions of skin cells. The ones we touch are dead already. But if you only lost cells, eventually you would run out of skin. So you have to replace cells at the same rate, more or less, than as you lose them. And there are always cells deeper to the dead ones that are being born by skin cells splitting into two to create more skin cells. And that's happening all the time. So in a typical skin cell, it will go pretty quickly through G1, have a fairly short lifetime, meet the conditions to get past the G1 checkpoint, and then go on and split. But a typical neuron, to use another cell from your body, never actually gets past the G1 checkpoint, which is why neurons do not repair themselves under usual circumstances. And a neuron will live for your entire lifetime, unless it dies before you do. So it never really gets past that checkpoint. And in that special circumstances, we use the denotation of G0, which is really G1, but it's a cell that is stuck in G1 indefinitely, G0. But it shows you the importance of the checkpoint itself. Without satisfying those conditions, there's no progression through. All right, none of that tells you what the checkpoints are as far as materials are concerned. And we're still figuring that out. And there's not just one master substance that controls all of this. But slide 15 shows you a little bit of what we know, and I don't want to give you too much detail in this course, but this shows you how a chemical set of circumstances can be used to control the cell cycle. The bottom figure here shows you one cell cycle with the subphases represented with initials. Notice the top, though, is several cell cycles, or multiple cell cycles. And the top part is a graph. It's really two graphs in one. The purple trace represents MPF activity. So the y-axis for there would be activity. MPF is an acronym that stands for mitogen promoting factor. Now, the word factor is used a lot of times in biology to denote a specific protein. So there's all kinds of different proteins that have factor in their names. This is just one of them. So it's a protein. A mitogen, well, the gen part, like in generation or genesis, means create or cause. So a mitogen is something that brings about mitosis. It causes the cell to split, in other words. And that's what MPF is. And notice that MPF spikes during the M phase, which is when the mitosis occurs. The other part of the graph, though, is the pinkish trace, which has units of concentration. So the y-axis for the pink one would be concentration. And it's specifically cyclin concentration. Okay, let's go down to the bottom picture to see what cyclin is. You can see cyclin represented by this shape. Cyclin is a protein also. All right. And so is this other shape in lighter purple called CDK. It's also a protein. CDK is short for cyclin-dependent kinase. And so that tells you it's what kind of thing? It is an enzyme. So CDK, cyclin-dependent kinase, is also a protein, because all enzymes are proteins, right? Kinase is not a specific enzyme. It's a category of enzymes, and in fact a huge category of enzymes. There's all kinds of different kinases. This is just one of them. But what defines kinase as a category is that they are all enzymes that operate for the purpose of phosphorylating a protein. So it's a kinase is an enzyme that when it catalyzes its reaction, that reaction leads to the phosphorylation of a protein. You stick a phosphate onto a protein. Well, think back to when we were talking about functional groups. That's when I first talked about phosphorylation and dephosphorylation. Dephosphorylation is detaching, the taking a phosphate off of something, right? Phosphorylation and dephosphorylation is used extensively by cells to either turn on or turn off proteins, to activate them or deactivate them. So remember I said that enzymes speed up reactions and therefore can control pathways, because without the enzymes' help, the pathway basically is shut off. And so by controlling enzymes, you control pathways. Well, you can turn a pathway off by destroying the enzyme so it no longer works, but if you need it to be turned on the next minute, you have to build a brand new enzyme to do the job, which takes time and energy to do. It would be much better to keep the enzyme there and just be able to switch it on and off as you need it. Well, phosphorylation and dephosphorylation provides that switch. So a lot of different proteins, including a lot of different enzymes, are switched on or off this way. And therefore, there's a whole category of enzymes whose job it is to flip those switches for other proteins to phosphorylate them and dephosphorylate them. Well, the enzymes responsible for putting the phosphates on are the kinases. All right? So CDK, cyclin-dependent kinase, is an enzyme, but it depends on cyclin for itself to be activated. So CDK is an enzyme that's usually not doing anything. It's an enzyme that's there but turned off. What turns it on is cyclin, this other protein. If cyclin is present, then it will bind to cyclin-dependent kinase to create what is called MPF, mitogen promoting factor. In other words, mitogen promoting factor is the activated form of CDK. And once CDK is activated, turned on, it then operates as a kinase to turn on some other enzyme by phosphorylating it. Is that all straight? Now let's look at what's happening in the graph to cyclin. Cyclin concentration is low early on in the cell cycle. And then late S phase, it starts accumulating, or it starts building up. The concentration rises, which means cyclin itself starts accumulating in the cell. The cell produces more and more copies of cyclin, the protein. Okay? Cyclin-dependent kinase, which is also a protein, is there the whole time. But if cyclin-dependent kinase is not hooked to a cyclin, it's not doing anything. So it's there, just not doing anything. Cyclin, once it builds up to a high enough concentration for it to be likely that it will bind to CDK, will eventually bind to the CDK that's been there the whole time. And that's when it's activated and becomes MPF. And once the cyclin-dependent kinase is activated, then it will turn on another enzyme by phosphorylating it, and that is an enzyme that's an important part of preparing to divide by mitosis. So that's why it's a mitogen. It brings about mitosis. All right, now notice the spike, though. As soon as cyclin reaches a critical high concentration, which is when the cell is splitting, it drops drastically to effectively zero, and that's because of what's happening in this cartoon. The cyclin that has been building up is now digested by the cell into separate amino acids, recycled. It's no longer cyclin, and therefore it's no longer connected to the CDK that's still there. Well, that means the CDK is now turned back off. So in this next cell, there's going to be no cell division until you build up more cyclin so that it can activate the CDK again in the next generation. All right, that's part of control. 16 shows you another aspect. These are fibroblasts, which are kind of connective tissue cells. Anyway, if you isolate these cells from an animal and put them in a solution that will keep them alive, give them nutrients, in other words, you can then plate them in these bottles that are shown. It's just like a petri dish has gel, it has agar gel in it, just the same, it's just a bottle. But anyway, both the blue and the red bottle have agar, which has proper nutrients to keep these cells alive. And they will remain alive. The difference between the two bottles is that the blue one has just nutrients to keep them alive, and that's it. The red one has the nutrients to keep them alive, plus it has PDGF, which is yet another protein. PDGF is short for platelet-derived growth factor, another factor, which is a protein. It's called platelet-derived growth factor because we discovered it in platelets, even though they're not the only things that have PDGF. But anyway, it's a protein that's involved in control of the cell cycle. And if you don't have the PDGF here, then these cells will remain alive, but they will not get the signal to split to produce new cells. They just are however many cells were there originally. But with the PDGF, notice that they proliferate, which means they multiply. They do that by going through the cell cycle and splitting. So enough more evidence that there are various chemicals involved in control of the cell cycle. 17 uses another example. Now here we have cells that for which it's not enough simply to have the chemical signal. Chemical signal has to be present, but also these cells exhibit what's called anchorage dependence. They have to have the signal chemically, and they also have to be anchored to some surface. They have to be stuck onto something. If you had them just in the liquid in the flask, even giving them the chemical signal, they still wouldn't divide. But when they know by being attached to a surface that they're on a surface, then when they get the chemical signal, they will divide. And this is how, for instance, skin heals. Right? When you have an injury, you're leaving a hole in that surface that needs to be filled. Well, it's filled by adding more cells, which are provided by splitting the cells. Okay, so there's anchorage dependence. They have to be on a surface first. But they also illustrate what is called density-dependent inhibition. And so the reason this space is filling is because the original cells were spurred on to creating new cells by splitting. But once all of the space filled, then they're told to quit dividing. That's what the inhibition is, density-dependent inhibition. When they sense that they've filled all the space, then they are turned off again, as far as dividing is concerned. And you can take a little scoop out, as you see here, leave another hole. That would be like another injury. And they'll the cells in that area will be spurred back on to dividing and until the hole is filled, and then it'll turn back off again. That is proper control of the cell cycle. But the cell cycle can go amiss. The things that control the cell cycle, something can go wrong with. And that results in cancer. Cancer is a genetic disorder. That doesn't mean it's heritable. It simply means DNA is involved. DNA is made of genes. Or genes are made of DNA, I should say. And so anything involving genes is genetic. Well, there's all kinds of genes coding for all different kinds of proteins, but some of those proteins are directly involved in controlling the cell cycle. So if something happens to the genes that are the instructions for indirectly how to build the proteins that are involved in the cell cycle, then you can lose control of the cell cycle. For instance, if a mutation, which is a change in DNA, that's what causes cancer, mutations. If the mutation is such that the result is the cell loses density-dependent inhibition, then it won't know it's supposed to turn off when the space is filled. It'll just keep dividing. And therefore, instead of just filling the space, it will start building up, which is exactly what a tumor is. And this happens because of mutations to the DNA. Starts as a single cell that gets this mutation. But since it thinks it's supposed to divide when it really shouldn't, when it does divide, it does so normally. It's an abnormal cell, but it normally divides by mitosis, which means you now have two identically defective cells, and they both think they're supposed to go on and divide again. So it just, they're doing what they think is right, splitting, and that results in a tumor. It starts as one defective cell, but they're all genetically identical when they start proliferating. Mutations themselves can be caused by all kinds of things, including just simply random, just time, basically. So the DNA that you have in your cells is no longer all identical, because you've accumulated mutations over the years by living. And this is exactly why cancer gets more prevalent the older a person gets, because you have a lifetime's worth of random mutations that build up. When you hit the mutation that actually affects the correct gene that shuts down the control of the cell cycle, that's when you get tumors growing. Well, 18 is the final slide in this show, and it shows you how cancer can progress. A tumor by itself is how it starts, and that doesn't necessarily interfere with anything, with the healthy cells that are around it. They can still do their job early on, and this is why detecting cancer as early as possible is so important, so you can just get rid of the tumor. It's an isolated problem. If you get rid of all those cells, then the other ones around them won't have the mutation, and they will obey the control of the cell cycle. If a tumor gets too big, though, it starts interfering with the normal functioning of whatever organ it's in, and that can cause problems by itself. But also, the bigger a tumor gets, the more cells it's made out of, obviously, and therefore the more likely it becomes for one of those cells to leave that tumor, take a ride in lymph or blood that travels around the body, and then take up residence in some other organ and start growing a new tumor there. That is called metastasis. The spread of cancer. And that's when it becomes much more difficult to cure, to deal with medically. And that's when it becomes much more of a serious life-threatening problem. All right, let's switch chapters.